Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 8th, 2018. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David. How are you? And good evening, everyone. We have a special guest tonight, Mr. Mike Partain, to discuss the issue of toxic water contamination at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, between 1953 and 1987. But first, I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. I want to remind our veterans that this is your show. This is the Veterans News Hour. David and I are simply the conduit to all of you about your questions and concerns and what's going on in the VA and in Congress. But first, our guest tonight is Mike Partain. He is the co-founder and public spokesman for an organization called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. From 1953 until 1987, the base water supply for the Marine Corps base Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, was highly contaminated with industrial chemicals. For the past decade, he has served as a community representative to the estimated 1 million sailors, Marines, and their families potentially affected by the Camp Lejeune contamination. He has testified before Congress, and he was invited as a special guest to the White House in 2012 for the signing of the Janie Ensminger Act into law. Much of this group's fight for justice was chronicled in the award-winning documentary Semper Fi, Always Faithful. Mike can also be found on Facebook at Camp Lejeune Toxic Water Survivors. So without any further ado, let's welcome Mike Partain to the Veterans News Hour. Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me on the show tonight.
No, it's our pleasure, and we really appreciate you taking the time to join us. You know, let's get right to it. You know, you've been very active with the water contamination at Camp Lejeune. What got you involved in that issue to begin with?
Well, I mean, this odyssey started for me 10 years ago with a hug from my ex-wife that revealed a bump in my chest, and which turned out to be male breast cancer. And in the space of 90 days, I went from what I thought was a healthy 39-year-old father of four to having a right radical mastectomy and have my chest chopped off to, oh, by the way, you were poisoned at the Marine base where you were born in 1968. And that's how I found out. I actually went through all that in the space between April of 2007 and June of 2007. And how I actually found out was my father saw a news story on CNN where Jerry Ensminger was testifying about how the base water supply had been contaminated from January, or I'm sorry, that they had been studying the children born on the base because of contamination from those who were born between January 1968 and December 1985. And my birthday was January 30th, 1968, and I realized, you know, right then and there, I was one of those kids and had been exposed to something horrible.
Wow, so you were born at Camp Lejeune, and, you know, I know you've done, you know, a lot of research on Camp Lejeune and going back from the beginning. Can you tell us and our listeners about the contamination that occurred there?
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of contaminants on the base. And, you know, there's like a list of 70 different items that were on the base. But what we focus on is what we can establish an exposure pathway. And there are four main chemicals that we were exposed to in the drinking water. What you got to realize is, even though you may have lived in one area of the base, the drinking water was drawn from the groundwater on the base, and there were eight systems that supplied the base with drinking water. Two of them were highly contaminated. There was another one that supplied the rifle range that was contaminated but not as bad. And what we're dealing with is fuel. The base had, on what they call main side, had not point, a underground fuel depot that was leaking. We have one document that states that it was leaking 1,500 gallons of fuel per month. And later on in our research, we uncovered documents that showed the Marine Corps and the Navy had lost 1.5 million gallons of fuel into the shallow aquifer at the base. They had, to give you an idea how bad and, you know, just how much of a nightmare scenario we're dealing with, is this fuel was floating in a, what they call a pure product layer that was 15 feet thick, and it was within 1,000 feet of one of the main drinking water wells on the base. That well, HP602, which supplied water to the Head Knot Point Water Treatment Center. Then you do, the other three contaminants were chlorinated solvents. The first one is trichloroethylene, which is a degreaser, is used in mechanic shops for vehicle maintenance, weapons, and so forth. You have tetrachloroethylene, which is also a degreaser, and that was used in dry cleaning, also for weapons cleaning. And then you have a degradation product called vinyl chloride, which is the end stage degradation of tetrachloroethylene and trichloroethylene, and that was also in our water. So we're dealing with three principal contaminants, three of which are known human carcinogens.
Wow. So all this is going on, and according to all the research and studies you've done, when did the military know that this contamination was occurring, that our military personnel were being exposed to it?
Well, the no part is one part of the equation. What you got to understand is, you know, when we have a begin date of 1953, which was provided to us by water model from a government agency called the Agency of Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. They go by the ATSDR. This agency is tasked with doing health assessments for Superfund sites, which Camp Lejeune was designated as a Superfund site in October 1989. So this water model goes back, it takes the contamination back to 1953, and they establish the end date for the drinking water contamination, and I emphasize drinking water because there are other exposure pathways, one of which is currently being evaluated. It's known as vapor intrusion, and we can talk about that separately. But the drinking water went from 1953 to 1987. And what the Marine Corps and the Navy doesn't really talk about, and it's, we have actually argued over this in congressional testimony, the Marine Corps and Navy has their own set of potable water regulations that they enforce themselves through the Bureau of Medicine and Surgery, known as BUMED. And these regulations, in early 1962, identified that industrial activity could and also be problematic for drinking water contamination. And they had certain safeguards and measures that evidently weren't being followed. And then by 1972, the BUMEDs changed to where they were tasked to start looking for chlorinated organics. There's no record of any testing that was done on the base. In 1974, we actually uncovered what's called a base order. It's rather strange. It was written by the commanding general. Typically, these orders come from headquarters, Marine Corps in Virginia. But this one in particular was written by the base commander that identified the dumping of hazardous materials such as, and the order actually says, such as organic solvents could lead to drinking water contamination. Yet, there's no testing on the base. The first actual testing of the drinking water on the base begins in October of 1980, and immediately these chemicals start showing up in testing. Now, when I say these chemicals, these are the organic solvents, and the reason why they showed up on the testing is because they interfered for what they were actually looking for, and they prevented the actual testing. Benzene didn't show up because benzene has to be specifically tested, and that appears later on. And according to the records, basically, Richard, nothing was done between October 1980 and November of 1984. And in November 1984, suddenly the base wakes up, begins closing wells down, and, taking the contaminated wells offline and trying to determine where the source of the contamination was. Sadly, at that point in time, instead of informing the population on the base what was going on, they were telling them in the newspapers, the Globe magazine, that there was only trace amounts of a unidentified or unspecific chemical in the water, and downplayed the actual problem that was going on. The extent of the contamination really was not known to the public until, I would say, probably after 1997, when former members of the base, former Marines, myself included, we started looking into the issue. That was headed by Jerry Ensminger. He's a retired master sergeant and former drill instructor. His daughter was actually conceived in the same neighborhood where I was born. She died in 1985 at the age of 9 of leukemia. But for the first 10 years, he and a retired major, Tom Townsend, kind of headed up the community efforts, and then I got involved in 2007 when I was diagnosed with breast cancer and realized that I had been exposed. So sadly, it took literally an act of Congress to force the Marine Corps and the Navy to start notifying the families in 2007 that we had been exposed. A lot of the information as far as who knew what, when, how, and why can be found on the website, The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. There's an actual linked timeline of events. It's kind of boring reading. It's 44 pages long, but my degree's in history, and I do investigations for the company I work for, and I put that timeline together and linked it to the pertinent documents to show what the Navy knew, what the Marine Corps knew, when they knew it, and what they did or did not do about it.
Wow. Now, before we get to what you did in Congress, tell us a little bit about your organization and the accomplishments that you all have achieved thus far. I've seen the website. The website's just awesome. And I invite all our guests listening to really go to that website. It's awesome.
Yeah, the website was our first vehicle. Of course, you know, since the website was developed, I'm actually working on my master's degree in history and bringing this out. But since the website was developed, you have social media, mainly Facebook and you know, Twitter and things like that. And that's where a lot of the activity is now. But the main website, which is The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten, was written to provide resources for veterans and their families. At the time, we didn't have any presumptive service connections or any type of congressional aid for the families or the Marines who became ill. And there's a list of illnesses that, you know, that we're dealing with. So we provided, you know, the timelines on there. You can download it. I encourage anyone that's has a claim with the VA to use that timeline in their claim and stuff. That's what it's there for. And it's also there to help educate the members of Congress, the media, anyone that we're trying to get the information out. Because what you got to understand is the Marine Corps and the Navy had a 25-year head start over us and, you know, had their rhetoric and their statements and their version of what happened down. And we had to, you know, literally beat down the walls to get people to listen to us because, you know, how do you fight the honor, the institution of honor and integrity? But the website also has a discussion board for people to ask questions and things like that too. Now, when you talk go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mike. Sorry, go ahead.
When you ask about accomplishments and things, you know, the website's one of the big accomplishments because that allowed us to unify. One of the problems that we face is, you know, like myself, I was born at Camp Lejeune. That's my birthplace. My dad was born in Paris Island. He was a Naval Cabinet graduate, a Marine officer. And, you know, Camp Lejeune to me throughout my entire life until I was 39 was nothing more than a name on my birth certificate that had a lot of bubbles to fill out when I was in school. That all changed, of course, when I was diagnosed with cancer. And my point is this, you know, very few people call Camp Lejeune home. It's a place that they're at, they're stationed, and then they cycle off to other bases or, you know, muster out of the Marine Corps or retire, and they go back to where they're from. In our case, my father moved to Florida when I was 4, and this is pretty much where I grew up. My hometown's Winter Haven, Florida. So the website allows us to communicate across states, across, you know, even actually different countries where we found different, you know, people who were exposed. And allows us to come together and resource our knowledge and information and experiences. You know, when you say accomplishments, in 2012, actually in 2009, we were able to use the research, the timeline that I mentioned, to force ATSDR to rescind their public health assessment they had issued in 1997, which kind of began the odyssey we're on now. That rescission of the public health assessment was actually the first time the agency had ever done so with a Superfund site. They've only done it one other time, and that was Vieques, Puerto Rico, where the Navy had been dumping and using part of the island for a bombing range. The next big victory for us was basically the documentary getting, we were approached and by a party that was interested in what we were doing, and that documentary helped us get the 2012 Jenny Insmer Act passed into law. And with that act, is the first basic admission that there's something wrong here and that the government has a responsibility in it, because what the act did is it provided limited health care for the Marines and the families who were stationed on the base or lived on the base for 30 days or more. And those conditions, there were 15 conditions: esophageal cancer, breast cancer, male and female, kidney cancer, multiple myeloma, renal toxicity, which is kidney disease, female infertility, scleroderma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, lung cancer, bladder cancer, leukemia, myelodysplastic syndromes, hepatic steatosis for the liver, miscarriages, and neurobehavior effects. And this was the crack in the dam that allowed people to get something. If you get kidney cancer, the VA pays for the treatments and things for your kidney cancer. But it wasn't a final say on what was, what needed to be done, because it didn't pay benefits. Like if you became disabled or if you passed away, there was no survivor benefits for your family. Plus, you still, had to argue a service connection, which leads to the next naturally big victory that we had in January of last year. Where the VA announced that they were going to extend a presumptive service connection. I believe it's the largest presumptive service connection since Agent Orange with Vietnam. And there are, I think it's 8 diseases that are on that list, and that's adult leukemia, aplastic anemia, bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. Basically, if you're a veteran and you have those diseases, all you have to show is that you're on the base for 30 days and that you have a diagnosis of the disease, and there's no argument. The VA steps in, provides treatment, provides medical benefits, survivor benefits for your family if you pass, and also if you're disabled, you receive disability. There's more to be done. We're still working on it. I'll stop here. If you want to ask about that, we can touch base on that too.
Well, before we do that, David, I know you have some questions.
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Richard. And for our listeners who may have just tuned in, our special guest tonight is Mike Partain. Mike is the co-founder and a spokesman for an organization called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. He's an expert on the issues of contamination of drinking water at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, between 1953 and 1987. I'd like to remind our listeners that your calls are welcome for your questions or comments. Our toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, for those of you just grabbing your pen and paper, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. We welcome your calls. Mike, thanks again for being on our show. I wanted to ask you if you would tell us about your testimony before Congress. I understand you testified before Congress, and could you share that experience with us?
Yeah, I testified twice. The first time was before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and it was actually testified along with other veterans with other environmental contamination issues, one of which was the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. The committee wanted to hear about what was going on with the health effects. And at the time, male breast cancer, as you probably know, is an extremely rare disease. I was kind of an odd one out being so young at 39, because typically male breast cancer strikes men who are 70 years of age or older, who are genetically predisposed to breast cancer. And and what have you. So the fact that I was 39 and genetically tested negative for the genes for breast cancer, it was an odd one out. Plus, I'd found at that time 20 other men who shared the single commonality of male breast cancer and exposure to the contaminated water at Camp Lejeune. So that testimony was important for twofold. One was to bring attention to Congress that there's something more to it, that, you know, here you've got this unusual cancer cluster that's appearing, and, you know, allowed us to extend our voice to the committee that there's something wrong, you know, with the water, and it's affecting the Marines and their families. After that testimony, which took place in October 2009, within I would say days, actually the same day, we started getting calls from all over the country from other men who had breast cancer that were Marines at the base or dependents of Marines. And that list went from 20 to 60, like overnight. CNN actually had done a piece about the breast cancer issue too. So between the CNN story and the congressional testimony, along with the national media coverage, the number of men exploded. By the way, the list today is about 110 men with breast cancer from Camp Lejeune, which is the single largest male breast cancer cluster that's ever been identified. The second time I testified was in 2010, and that had to deal with the Marine Corps put out, you know, and I try to condense this down to where it's not a long story, but one of the fights that we had was we're fighting the Marine Corps, which is, you know, the institution of honor and integrity. I mean, as a son of a Marine and grandson of Marine officers, growing up, the worst thing I could ever do was not represent the truth or take accountability for my actions. I got more ass beatings for lying than I did for anything else. And when you're dealing with, you know, an institution that prides itself on honor and integrity, it is hard to say that's not what's happening, or, you know, this is not being represented as being correctly true. Right. And, you know, the timeline that I researched with Jerry, you know, we worked hours upon hours putting that timeline together, and it was a crack in the armor, because I know at one meeting we had a colonel who was saying that, you know, the Marine Corps notified their families back in 1985, and I pulled the timeline out and said, no, you didn't. Matter of fact, here's a quote from your environmental engineer saying that people weren't directly exposed to the pollutants, and this quote's from September of 1985. So what ended up happening that in the that precipitated this hearing was we were establishing credibility, and the narrative from the Marine Corps, they were losing control of it, because every time they would come out with a public statement, we would put up a document, their own documents. You know, we didn't even manufacture the document. We'd pull up their own document. Here, this is what you guys said. And as Jerry would often say, you know, we had the advantages because they told all their lies up front. And then once we started digging into the documents and finding out what really was going on, it was easy for us to say, no, you're not telling the truth here. So in 2010, the Marine Corps put out a informational booklet, which they, you know, they sent out to the families. And when you read the booklet, it just looks like, you know, oh, this is a horrible accident. It's not really our fault. And, you know, we really are concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of our Marine family, which is their constant statement. And, you know, the members of Congress saw the booklet. They talked to Jerry and myself about the content, and when we started showing them where the booklet was misleading, they hauled in representatives of the Marine Corps, and they brought me and a couple other advocates and held a hearing on it, and basically rebutted the booklet and the information, you know, the informational war. And from that point on, the Marine Corps generally will not appear, if there's any type of news media, the Marine Corps will not appear live in person on a news media or an interview, especially if Jerry and I are present. And to this day, what they typically do is they send a written statement in, and will not send anybody on camera. And wow, what that represents is that the families and the, you know, Marines who were stationed at the base, you know, we have control of the narrative of what went on in the base, and they don't want to take part in that. Sadly, to this date, nobody from headquarters, Marine Corps, has ever taken the time to contact Jerry or myself to sit down and say, hey, you know, can we talk about this? That hasn't happened, which is a sad thing because, you know, when you look at the Marine Corps and what it represents, you know, the people who serve, like my father and my grandfather, Jerry, you know, they're some of the finest people I've ever met, and I looked up to them growing up. And, you know, Semper Fi has meaning. And to men like my father, Jerry, my grandfather, and others who are on the base, you know, it's what they live by. And you'd like to see the leadership of the Marine Corps live by the same values.
Right. I would also note that since the pollution period that you were discussing was between 1953 and about 1987, the current leadership of the Marine Corps, you know, that's now 30 years ago. Perhaps there are some very senior members that were on active duty back then. I'm sure there are some, but for the most part, they aren't. So you would think that just with the passage of time, perhaps they would focus more on the integrity and the reputation, restoring the reputation of the Corps. But it's fascinating. Mike, before I wanted to ask, because I understand you had a visit to the White House. Before I ask you about that, though, I'd like to follow up with what I think I personally think is an important question, because you mentioned earlier these two lists of diseases, and one of them, a list of 15, which, as I understand it, covers those that can receive health care, and the other list of 8 diseases is the presumptive list for service connection for VA disability compensation. So the first list passed by law by Congress at 15, and then the VA's regulation, which came out last year, had 8. And what's remarkable to me is that the first list had breast cancer. The second list did not. Could you share with us your thoughts on that?
Yes. There was a battle when this presumptive service connection was announced. We have been in battle with the VA for a while, before 2012 and after, because what ended up happening in 2013, the VA created what they call a subject matter expert, where they were taking medical occupational doctors and establishing, designating them as an independent medical reviewer. And they would go through the veterans' files and make decisions and write these decisions. And what ended up happening was once this SME program took hold, the approval rates for Camp Lejeune claims plummeted from around 26%, and it held that way for about 5 years, down to below 5%. Wow. Then we started finding the decisions, and, you know, we found out that the VA was using, cherry-picking the library and providing that to the specialist. They were discarding studies that supported a link between exposure and sickness or illness with the chemicals, and they were relying on a flawed report that was issued in 2009, known as National Academy's review on Camp Lejeune. And then we also found out, as we read these studies, like, for example, here in Florida, we had a veteran who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It was a rather rare one. And we have several veterans with the same type of rare non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And the doctor actually went to Wikipedia and cut and pasted parts of Wikipedia in his decision, but left off the word "not" to make his review not in favor of the veteran, and the veteran received a denial. And that actually made the news down here in Florida. But when the Channel 6 reporter went back to VA, the VA didn't deny the SME used Wikipedia. They wouldn't confirm nor deny it, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. So that part of the VA process has been ongoing. And what happened, when I mentioned earlier, was there was a battle with the VA over this presumptive service connection. The ATSDR was tasked to provide recommendations. At first, the VA announced their own findings, and then we had to battle them back into the rink and force them to deal with ATSDR and look at what ATSDR had to say as far as what was associated. With breast cancer, there is research out on the solvents, but it's inconclusive. And with male breast cancer, because it's so rare, there is little to no research linking the salt, any solvent exposure to breast cancer. ATSDR did do a male breast cancer study, and they found a small linkage between early onset of male breast cancer and exposure to the solvent. The critical part of what's going on when you ask the question about why the 15 versus the 8, like I said, most of it is just not enough information, like esophageal cancer is another one that has some casual associations, but there's no clear scientific X marks the spot that esophageal cancer is caused by TCE, and there are other factors that cause that. Hopefully to remedy that situation, we are currently working with ATSDR to conduct a one-of-a-kind study. It's a seminal study. What it is a cancer incidence study for the Lejeune population. And for the first time, ATSDR is reaching out to the national there's no national database for cancer or cancer incidences, so they're reaching out to all 50 state cancer databases and trying to pull together of what happened to the Lejeune population. You know, how many men did come down with breast cancer that were stationed at Lejeune? How many esophageal cancers are there, leukemias, and so forth? And once this study is completed, we should have a more accurate picture to add other diseases as we find them in that study. But the important part of that is, it's going to take the cancer registries for all 50 states, because like I said earlier, Lejeune is not hometown to me or anyone else. Right. They're from, Wyoming, from California, from Florida, Virginia, Georgia, Montana. And all 50 states need to participate on this so we can get to the data to study the people who were there.
And they also have to somehow identify and make that link between those that have these diseases and the time and duration of their stay at Lejeune. So I can see there's a number of dots they're going to have to connect. But
well, that's something that the VA likes to argue, the time and duration at Lejeune. And right. That is actually another subject. But when you're dealing with carcinogens, risk isn't, you don't fill up a bottle and at a certain point you reach, you're going to get sick. When you're dealing with carcinogens, whether it's ingesting them, breathing them, drinking them, or absorbing them through your skin, it's more of a crapshoot. You roll the dice. Every time you're exposed, you roll the dice. And if you roll the unlucky number, you get snake eyes, well, guess what? You've got cancer. So it's a common misperception to think that, if I was there 6 years, I'm more likely to get cancer than someone who is there a year or 30 days. If you roll the, it's a roll of the bones. Yes, I have more opportunities to get cancer because I was there 6 years or so. But the fact that you can't dismiss someone who was there 45 days for advanced infantry training and they drank the water in the field that was provided to them through a highly contaminated drinking water plant, and right, they got cancer. I mean, that is something that's being argued in the toxicology world even as we speak.
Right. Well, I wanted to point out is that, as a lot of veterans know, that there has been there still is the Vietnam Veterans Agent Orange presumptive list, which for those, if they set foot for just one day in Vietnam, then they can qualify under the Agent Orange presumption in the long list of diseases there. The Lejeune regulations, which came out last year, I'll use the word arbitrary, but I'm sure the VA doesn't think it is, but they require that the veteran served no less than 30 days. They can be consecutive or non-consecutive at Camp Lejeune between the 53 and 87 time frame. So I understand exactly what you're saying, But, you know, the Vietnam vets have a, you know, if you were there one day, and the Lejeune vets have the 30-day
yes.
obstacle. So,
that was the 30-day. The VA was not going to go away without some type of time constraint. And if you look at some of the decisions that were rendered before the presumptive service came out, they were actually stating and citing that, duration of exposure. And they were trying to argue that, you know, they were only there for 30 days. And like, for example, there's a veteran in Dunellen, not too far from where I live, who had kidney cancer. He was there for advanced infantry training. I think he was on the base a total of maybe 45, 60 days, if that. And he got kidney cancer later in life. Because, you know, with cancer, you're dealing with latency periods, sometimes 20, 40 years. But he passed away, and the VA denied. And finally, with the presumptive, his wife just now started receiving benefits in March of this year when they made the presumption effective.
Wow. Well, a lot of fascinating stuff, a lot of details, and I appreciate you sharing your knowledge. Before turning things back over to Richard Hurley, I wanted to ask you about, I understand you visited the White House in 2012. What was that about?
Oh, yes.
Go ahead. Can you tell us about that?
I mean, that was surreal. My degree's in history. I've been a student in history all my life. And to set foot in the Oval Office was the greatest honor of my life. And, of course, I sat there just looking at everything and the Resolute desk and realizing, oh, that's where little John was playing while President Kennedy was sitting at the desk working, and, you know, all the history that was, you know, that took place in there. And I was mesmerized by that. And, Mr. Obama was very gracious. We witnessed him sign the 2012 act into law and got the pen and, took part in that. And, you know, that was a huge turning point for us in our fight and, against, the Navy and Marine Corps for what happened on the base. You know, you'd mentioned earlier about the leadership when I was talking about him. I won't mention his name out of respect to the family, but there was a general who was testifying against me. And as a young officer, he's my father's age almost, but as a young officer, he served at Camp Lejeune back in the 70s. And his wife has had a brain tumor. I don't know if she's alive or not because he retired a while back. But his wife had a brain tumor, and they lived at Terra Terrace, or it was either Paradise Point or Terra Terrace, which were the contaminated communities. And, you know, I asked him, I said, do you think this has anything to do with it? He goes, no. And, in brain tumors, you know, we've seen them on the base. There's been reports of it. I mean, there's not just the cancers we see on the list. We see weird types of cancers, appendix cancer and things like that.
Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt. We got a caller on line five. I want to give that caller an opportunity. So, Doug, could you bring on our caller, James? Hello, James.
Yes.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. Our guest is Mike Partain. You have a question for us.
Yes. I'd like to know why the dependents are not being treated the same as the veterans. We never signed a paper that said that, you know, when you join the military, you sign a paper that says they can take your life. The dependents didn't.
Well, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I'm just curious,
if I may,
you know, I mean,
can I answer that?
Yes, go ahead and answer, please, Mike.
Okay.
We were going to address that.
And I'm sorry, I didn't catch
question.
Your name, but I was born at the base in 1968. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm a dependent. We have gotten a lot since we started, but there is a disparity between the dependents and the Marines. For example, with the new presumptive service connection, you know, God forbid, my father comes down with kidney cancer, and say my mother comes down with kidney cancer, and I come down with kidney cancer. Under the way things are situated, my father would receive an automatic presumptive service connection. He would be treated medically, and he would be provided disability benefits if he could not work. And he would also receive my mother would receive death benefits if he should die from kidney cancer. Now, my mother and myself, if we were to get kidney cancer, we would receive medical care as a last resort. meaning like my insurance that I have through my employer, they pay first. And then any co-pays or deductibles or anything that's not covered by my employer's insurance, the VA and the government would pick that up. If I should die from kidney cancer, my wife and family receives nothing. If my mom should die from kidney cancer, my father would receive nothing. And that's a huge disparity between the veterans and the families. And that disparity exists because of a little-known 2014 Supreme Court ruling. And to condense that story down to something short, what happened is shortly after the 2012 law was signed by President Obama, the Department of Justice approached a private polluter in North Carolina who had lost their case on appeal in the federal appeals court. And this polluter had dumped trichloroethylene in Asheville, North Carolina, and poisoned families around their plant and then shut the plant down in 1986. In 1997, the chemical had migrated downhill to the families, and kids were getting leukemia. There was, I believe, kidney cancer. The same things we're seeing out at Camp Lejeune. The families brought suit. They were winning. But what happened was the Department of Justice wrote an amicus brief on behalf of the polluter to take the case to the Supreme Court because of their interest in Camp Lejeune. And what they were trying to do is there was a little-known real estate statute of repose on where you had to bring suit 10 years after the last action of the polluter. And CERCLA had not addressed the statute of repose. They had addressed what they call statute of limitations. And under CERCLA, which is the Superfund law, you have 2 years from the date that you discover that you were harmed. Like in my case, I realized in 2007 that I had been poisoned by the water at Camp Lejeune, so I had until 2009 to file suit against the government. Well, under the statute, statute of repose. Technically, I would have to file my claim at Camp Lejeune 12 years in 1995, 12 years before I even knew I had cancer or had been poisoned at Camp Lejeune. The Supreme Court accepted the case, heard it, and in a 7-2 ruling, basically came back and said that corporations deserve their protection and have, you know, a limitation to when they can be sued, and struck down the verdict for CTS Corporation. They struck down the verdict that favored the families against CTS Corporation. And that has effectively blocked any type of litigation on behalf of the families until we find a way around it. To give you an idea how crazy this is, shortly after that verdict in June of 2014, state of North Carolina's legislature went back and actually unanimously passed a resolution stating that the Supreme Court had misinterpreted their statute, and the Supreme Court refused to hear it because to this day we're kind of in legal limbo. For the families to get the justice that we've been fighting for, it's going to have to come from Congress, and we're going to have to mobilize and put pressure on Congress to do something. And unfortunately, with the dysfunctional Congress that we have right now, that's been a very hard fight. But we haven't forgot about our families. I mean, I talk about the veterans, but I'm one of those dependents. And, yeah, the bus kind of left us at the stop.
Wow. That's amazing. And your expertise is just awesome. Richard, over to you.
No, our call is still on. Do you still have another question, sir?
Well, I was just more or less wanting to make a statement that, you know, I've lost both my parents now to this, and I've got a lot of issues, and I can't even get testing, and I am a veteran, and I specifically asked for testing and cannot get it. The VA,
Doug, what type of testing were you asking for?
I've been asking for learning disability testing for 3 years, and I have asked everybody that I've come in contact with.
Now, were you born at Lejeune? Is it?
Yes, sir, I was.
Okay. I also went from
one toxic base to another, one right after another. I mean, I know of 4 Superfund sites that we served on.
Yeah, well, a lot of the Navy Marine Corps bases were like that. The thing about that is Lejeune is one of the ones that we can prove in the documentation that we were exposed. And that's why Lejeune is standing out versus the other bases that, you know, that are out there. Because the Department of Defense, you've got to understand, the Department of Defense has 133-plus Superfund sites listed on the national priorities list. I think it's 132, 133, one of the numbers.
Wasn't the testing compared between Lejeune and Camp Pendleton, and both of them are considered toxic?
No, the testing wasn't compared. What happened was when they did, and for the listeners that aren't familiar, when ATSDR did their initial health studies where they were looking at the Marines, there was a cancer death study that was done, and they found an association with kidney cancer and some other associations I don't have off the top of my head. But they compared the Lejeune population to a comparable population out of Camp Pendleton. And during this course of that study, there was contamination at Pendleton, but the extent of it wasn't defined as it was at Lejeune. And even with that comparison, there were more deaths at Lejeune that stood out, cancer deaths.
Right. Right. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, caller. Appreciate you doing that. Mike, I got a question.
We're competing against the national championship, Alabama and Georgia.
What's that?
I said, I understand we're competing tonight against the national championship game between Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, I think we are, but that's okay. They can get it on tape. Mike, what can the VA be doing better to help the veterans and their families? And you've talked about a lot of things, but do you have anything specific you can point to before we start wrapping up?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the SME program. That has been a sore spot with the community, in particular because we found out as we tried to examine the credentials of the people we could identify, there was questions. There was conflict of interest. So we had one SME examiner who was examining and then doing consulting work for the government and private industry to defend them against workman comp claims for toxic exposures. If that's not a conflict of interest, I don't know what would be. We have asked the VA to disclose these people's names. There is a current lawsuit that Jerry and I are involved in with Yale Law School trying to uncover the VA's documents because they would not honor our FOIA. So we filed a FOIA lawsuit. And one of the things, we're trying to find out who these people are so we can vet them and see who they are and be fair, because if these veterans are going to be making decisions of life, which are life and death for the veterans, if these SMEs are going to make those decisions, then a veteran should have a right to know who they are, what their qualifications are. Because we have found in decisions where a veteran presents a nexus letter that's written by a board-certified oncologist who specializes in that particular field, saying that this veteran is more likely to have cancer because of his exposures at Camp Lejeune, and then an SME who is board-certified at nothing overrules and says that his nexus letter doesn't carry any weight. But, you know, how can we know that if we don't know who the SME is? So that type of clarity and openness is something that's lacking with the VA and would be a welcome change if they were to open up and make those disclosures and also fulfill our FOIA request. Because I know in some of the documents that we found, the VA's preoccupation with Camp Lejeune and the SME program was more of trying to prevent claims and head them off before they got started than it was to take care of the veteran.
Mike, your organization does a lot of great things. What can we do, the listeners and other people out there, what can we do to help your organization?
Well, the main thing is getting the word out in the community, because believe it or not, there are still Marines and families that were there during that time period that don't know what happened, don't know they were exposed. And when you're dealing with cancer, early detection is key. I can't tell you how many times I've run into people who, if they had known earlier, they may have caught their cancer earlier and still be here today. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of the people I've talked to, including with the male breast cancer, they're not here anymore because cancer, you know, is a fatal disease if you don't catch it. So the community, you know, the big thing is help spread the word about the website, and also, believe it or not, pick up the phone and call your particular senator. You got two of them, U.S. senators. Call them up and say, hey, I heard about this Lejeune issue. You know, these people defended our country, and they and their families need to be taken care of. And the
Mike,
same
I'm
thing
sorry to
for
interrupt.
Your,
we got
your
another
representative.
Caller.
Call them.
I'm sorry, Mike. We got another caller. No, we're running out of time here. Doug, can you bring that caller on? Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. Who is this?
Yes, this is Bill.
Bill, welcome to the show. What question
hey,
do you have for our guest?
I wanted to know, is there anything being done more about the neurobehavioral? I have all kinds of neurobehavioral issues, and I keep getting turned down, even though I've had a doctor from the VA say that it's as likely as not caused by the chemicals. And
do you have that in writing?
Be enough.
Do you have that in
yes,
writing?
Yes, I have
a doctor.
Yes, and I sent it in, and they still deny that they
make sure you send me a message through the website if you're on Facebook or through
I'm not on Facebook.
The Proud. I'd like to talk to you some more.
Okay, well, I
Mike,
actually
your
have
phone
your phone
number.
Number.
Gentlemen.
Okay.
Mike, can you give
my
your phone number to this gentleman?
Yeah, he
I have his
he has
phone
it.
Number. I'm one of Don's friends.
I see.
Okay.
I've talked to you before.
Are you talking about Don Burpee?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think I remember who you are now. And that's
yeah,
the,
I have neuropathy and all.
Yeah, when you
yes,
mentioned the
neurobehavior
effects, that is one
yes.
of the issues that we're dealing with the VA, where you know they have clinical guidance on it, but they're not following their own clinical guidance.
Yes, sir.
And it's been a problem in trying to get them to really get out there is and be honest. It's kind of like nailing Jell-O to the wall. And I'll give you an example because
yes.
I know we're running out of time. Someone posted on the website earlier that they have liver cancer, and the VA gave them a service connection but rated them zero, and they've had 4 to 5
yeah.
surgeries. I don't yeah. know how you can be a 0% rating going through chemotherapy, surgeries, and what have you. I don't know if he's in remission or not, but that's something that we're hearing more and more of with the VA, that they're taking the path of least resistance. Okay, well, you had cancer, you got 0% because, you know, the tumor's gone, or, yeah, one of your kidneys is gone, but we're not going to give you anything.
Yeah. Mike, yeah. real quick, I know
have,
we only got about a minute. We only have about a minute left, and thank you, caller. We've got one more caller, Darlene, and then we've got about a minute for that. Mike, Doug, if you want to bring on
give
Darlene.
Give me a call later.
Hello?
Yes, Darlene, we're about running out of time here. What's your question for Mike Partain?
Well, actually, some of it just got answered. My husband also, I just went through the process. They just said that his cancer was related, gave him a 0% rating. I believe what they did was I had 4 SME letters that all said my husband's cancer was related. They said because it's in remission, it's a 0%, and they did that so I couldn't file a suit for a denial case, I don't think. But the residual effects from the cancer, the surgery and so forth, they just gave me a 0% rating and said, sorry, but you are related to the Camp Lejeune. Your cancer is related. They related it under esophageal cancer, but in our case, it was squamous cell carcinoma, unknown primary. Treatment was done to the esophagus, tonsils, throat, etc., because that's where they believe it came from. So I'm not really sure what to do at this point. They rated him service-related. His cancer was service-related, but they're giving us 0%.
Mike, we're about out of time, but anything you want to say on that, Mike?
Yeah, if you can get in touch with me, we do have a meeting, and I'll end with this here. We have a meeting upcoming January 23rd in Atlanta at the CDC with ATSDR. If any of the listeners are in this area or nearby Atlanta can get to it for that meeting, please come. We need you there. And, ma'am, I forgot your name.
Darlene.
It's Darlene, and I'm on your website, and Tara knows how to reach me.
Okay, get me a message with your name and phone number. I would like to talk to you. I probably won't be able to get to you tonight, but I can talk to you tomorrow.
All right, that sounds great. I'll do that.
Darlene, you can also call myself. My number's on the website as well, so give me a ring if you want to speak to me.
I sure will. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, great.
Well, Richard, we're about out of time. If you want to offer anything,
I want to thank you very much for participating tonight. And before you go, why don't you give the listeners one more time your information, the website, and any other information you want to give them, how to reach out for you.
Okay. Well, the main website on the web is The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. There is a link where you can email me through there. And if you're on Facebook, we have the Camp Lejeune, Toxic Water Survivors site. I was trying to get back to that. But anyways, the Camp Lejeune Toxic Waters Facebook site. And you can reach me through there, send me a message. I admin that particular site. And those are the best two ways to reach me, preferably through email or messaging. I will respond. I do work a day job, and, you know, by day I work for insurance. But, we need to talk to these people and get them organized. And that's what we're trying to do through these websites.
Mike, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. It's a great show tonight. And, you and I are in touch with each other quite regularly. So we'll be seeing what we can do. And again, thanks very much. And David?
Yes, thanks very much, Mike. It's been a very quick, fascinating hour. Thank our special guest, Mike Partain. Thank our show producer, Mr. Doug Newsom. Thank you, listeners. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another great edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, have a great week and good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.